Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, your host here, Colt Molesky, bringing you daily Timberwolves content. Make sure to check out the LockedOn.com website. It's a convenient place to check out all the podcast hosts and the content they're bringing from around the country. They're giving you MLB, NBA, NFL, college content. Make sure you're checking out all that great stuff on the LockedOn.com website. Today, we're going to be talking with Chris Grenham of SB Nation. He covers the Celtics primarily, but he just writes a lot about basketball. He's a great basketball insight. He's covered a bunch of different teams from around the NBA, and we're bringing him on to get us prepared for the Celtics tomorrow. Now, it's going to be a back-to-back for the Celtics, right, Chris?
Yep. Cleveland's coming into TD Garden tonight, and then the Celtics have had a weird schedule lately. They played on Monday night, and then they had the week off following a back-to-back last weekend, and then they go into this back-to-back too. So kind of a wonky schedule for them. But yeah, the second night of a back-to-back for Boston.
It's a weird way to make up for a back-to-back to say, well, we're gonna make you play two nights in a row, but then we're gonna give you a few days off. And it's just like, why don't you just stagger the games?
Pretty bizarre.
All right, so we're gonna talk with Chris about what is going on with these two teams, Timberwolves and Celtics, going into this one. I think there are some similarities with maybe the problems that these two teams face, but we'll get into that. We're going to get into predictions, what's going to happen in this game, key matchups, all that good stuff. But first, I just wanted to hear how are you doing, Chris? How are things in Boston? I don't want to say panic, because you shouldn't really panic. The NBA is definitely a marathon. The season is a marathon, not a sprint. But what is the feeling around this game after 21 games? Is there a feeling that you're kind of getting what – you're seeing what you're going to get for the season? Or is there just still a feeling of there's still just a lot of rust to be worked off this team? Because it has been a weird season for the Celtics.
Yeah, it definitely has. I don't know if I would say rust. It's more so – almost uncertainty, because you don't really know what team you're going to get. There's been a lot of, you know, changes in rotations and changes in lineups. In terms of, you know, if there's like any panic, I don't see that being around the team. I don't see that around the local media at all. With the fans, you dive into, you know, my Twitter mentions after a game, and there might be plenty of panic in there. But I think there's, you know, like you said, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. They're 21 games in. No one expected the Celtics to be 11-10 at this point, but they're slowly figuring it out. I mean, there's a lot of talent and a lot of depth on this team, so they're much better than an 11-10 team. But, you know, right now they just haven't been playing that well. Hopefully they solved some of those issues on Monday night in New Orleans. A lot of people think that they solved their starting lineup problems. But again, that we'll just have to wait and see tonight against Cleveland.
Yeah, panic. I don't think you can panic, especially not yet. I mean, you have a top three head coach, I would say. Yeah. It's definitely
Boston sports fans, though, they can panic. Like, they can at the drop of a hat. If something's not going their way, they will panic. So there was calls for trades, calls for lineup changes, just absolute mayhem on Twitter after, I don't know, maybe when they were at 7-6 or 8-6 or something like that. It was getting a little messy in the dark world of Twitter.
As things usually tend to be in the dark world of Twitter.
Exactly.
So let's get into some of these numbers here. So the Celtics, I think the biggest thing that wasn't expected, just because Kyrie, even though he's still, if you look at the numbers just for point guards, he's still one of the top 10, top 5 point guards for a lot of the numbers, points, assists. Yep. Field goal percentage, all that good stuff. But then you have their problems on offense. They just broke, I think it was, what was it, last week, they broke into the 100 mark for pace this year average. Their defensive rating has been pretty solid, but their offensive net rating has been pretty bad. If you're looking at traditional stats, points per game, three-point efficiency, all that stuff has been down. I know it's never one thing with these type of things, but can it be kind of pointed to just the rawness that Gordon Hayward is still kind of playing with, and just the kind of turn for the worse that Jaylen Brown has taken, are those kind of two things that are more still. And I know that Al Horford hasn't been playing as well either, but are those kind of two things that you can point to and say those definitely aren't helping, and those are kind of the big elephant in the room?
Yeah, they're definitely factors. I mean, Brad Stevens said it last weekend after loss. There's a myriad of issues here. There's a lot of problems going on. So it's not necessarily just one, two, or even three issues. It's a mix. You've got Al Horford, who hasn't had the greatest start to a season. Jason Tatum kind of getting into this almost pressing mentality early in the season. He's taking a lot of long twos, not really great early on the defensive end. He's corrected a lot of those problems at this point. And then you've got guys like Gordon Hayward, who, of course, it's going to take a little while for him to get back to full strength or even close to full strength. I don't think we'll really be at that point until like the All-Star break, but they're now moving him off the bench. And Terry Rozier hasn't been great after a phenomenal playoff run last year. He's been, he's been fine on the defensive end. You know, he's got one of the higher defensive ratings in the league, but his shot selection has been pretty poor. And it's really just a giant mix. Of course, Kyrie's been fine. Scoring wise, a lot of people want him to get his teammates involved a little bit more. And you talk about the pace. It's been on the slower side. Against New Orleans on Monday night, they upped it a little bit, and they looked really good. It was definitely their best end-to-end win of the season, because that was the problem. If you looked at their defensive rating when the Celtics were still falling around 500, it was still top two in the league, top three in the league. But then you look at their record, and you're like, well, this doesn't make any sense. You break it down by quarter, and the first two quarters, their defensive rating would be phenomenal. And then you'd get later in the game, and it would just go right to the basement. It was terrible. So whether that's an effort issue, whether that's a complacency issue, I'm not really sure. And ultimately that's up, you know, to the team and Brad Stevens to figure out, but it's a multitude of problems here, and they're slowly getting fixed. And I'm confident that they will be fixed ultimately, but it's really tough to point it just to a couple injuries or a couple guys who aren't performing as well.
I want to talk about minutes for a second. I know that everybody knows that the difficulty, even going into the season, was going to be how do you play everybody enough minutes and get everybody who needs minutes the minutes they need to find a rhythm. And that's just hard because there's so many. There's a wealth of riches. And really I want to talk about because I like another team's having problems with minutes. Again, very different reasons from the Timberwolves. But you know, it's nice for someone else to have to talk about minutes as well. And
it's misery loves company.
Exactly. And so as you've seen this team through 21 games now, a pretty solid sample size, who on this roster is still not getting enough minutes, and who do you think is maybe getting too many minutes?
That's a good question. Now, obviously it's tough because they're still figuring it out. Earlier in the season, I definitely would have told you that Gordon Hayward was getting too many minutes. Of course, he started on a minute restriction, but that didn't last very long. He was on a 25-minute restriction, I believe, and it didn't last long. He's played 25-plus minutes, a decent amount, but now that they're bringing him off the bench, he's not playing as much. I would have also said earlier that Marcus Smart probably needed more minutes. Marcus Smart isn't a guy that has a lot of value on a bad team, but on a group like the Celtics, he brings a lot of intensity and a ton of energy. He got the start on Monday night, and I'm assuming he's going to get the start again tonight. He played 40 minutes, which doesn't really happen on Brad Stevens' coach teams.
Yeah,
it was the most minutes out of anyone for the Celtics for a non-OT game this season, and he's one of only a couple guys in Brad Stevens' tenure here to only play to play 40 minutes. So I think he will see some increased minutes, but he would be the guy I would point to alongside Marcus Morris. But he averages about 27 minutes a game, I believe, already. Stevens does a really good job of kind of spreading the wealth with a team. He's got the hardest job in the world, man, trying to figure out how to balance these minutes out with a team that you can easily go 9 or 10, even 11 deep in a rotation. So I think he's done a good job. I think you'll see Jaylen Brown's minutes kind of tick back a little bit if Smart's start to go up over this run. Of course, Jaylen Brown is hurt. He's not going to play tonight. And Al Horford's not going to play tonight either. But I think as Smarts go up, Jaylen Brown might be the guy where you see them cut back a little bit.
And it's just, I think that this kind of aligns a little bit with the Timberwolves, but in a different way. I think that you see a team that's trying to figure out how to really dedicate itself and find the five guys or the six guys it needs to play in like the last 5 minutes of a game.
Right.
Whereas the Timberwolves are kind of the flip side of that, where they've been learning, and Tibbs has done a better job this year stepping outside of himself and being this coach, but they need to learn how to play more than just the six guys. You know, they need to learn how to use the extent of a roster to give their team versatility and to throw versatility at opposing defenses. And so now you have these two kind of clashes meet where both are desperately trying to find the formula that's going to result in the most wins. And it's kind of a learning curve for both teams this year.
Yeah, and especially for Tom Thibodeau. I mean, spreading minutes has never been his strong suit at all. So watching him kind of adapt with this newly formed roster post-Jimmy Butler has been pretty fascinating. But I think he's done a pretty good job. And it's a lot of teams that are in this situation, like the Celtics and like the T-Wolves, where they do have the benefit of some pretty good depth and they've got a lot of guys that can play rotation minutes. It takes a couple weeks, maybe even a couple months, for the coaches really to get a feel for these lineups and for these rotations and who should get who is five is going to be down the stretch in the last couple minutes of a close game. And it's kind of fascinating to watch, especially with a guy like Thibodeau, to see that form. But I think, you know, these are two really, really good coaches that I respect and think will be just fine in terms of balancing out these minutes. But it is fascinating to watch. I agree.
Let's get into some of the matchups, the more nitpicking facets of this game now.
Yeah.
Derrick Rose and Josh Okogie, those are the two guys that I think have moved the pace the most impressively for the Timberwolves. They're the best in transition. They're the best to break a defensive transition. Are those the two guys that could cause the most problems for the Celtics, a team that's still kind of working on pace and getting out of the half court?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, guards and particularly perimeter-based players have caused fits for the Celtics this year. And you saw last Wednesday, I believe it was, when they played the Knicks, Trey Burke go off for 28 points. And prior to that game, they had Kemba Walker, who crushes everyone, but Kemba Walker went off for 40-plus. And then against Dallas last weekend, they played and J.J. Barea went off for 20-plus points. So they've had a lot of trouble with guards, specifically scoring guards. But you bring in a guy like Okogie and Derrick Rose, and you got to figure out who to focus on. And they've done a good job kind of working a dual guard set with both of those guys this season. So, yeah, I think if you're going to focus on any particular matchup, that's probably the one. Of course, Karl Anthony Towns is going to cause trouble, but I do think that Rose and Okogie are probably two guys to key in on if you're looking for a matchup that the Celtics are going to have to focus with.
If both these teams the Wolves obviously are just going to play offense, but if the Celtics get pulled into their style of play, is there a real chance that both Kyrie Irving and Derrick Rose drop 40 in this game?
I mean, we've seen it a couple times this year where Kyrie just goes into like this ridiculous Kyrie mode where no one's even looking for a pass. It's just like he's smoking down court. And it's really fun to watch. It's incredible. But if they do get sucked into one of those things, yeah, you could totally see these guards just with dueling 40-point games. And I personally wouldn't mind that at all. I would really enjoy watching that.
I'm not sure what it would mean for the Celtics. It could mean that they're going to win. It could mean that they are going to lose. But I know for a fact if Derrick Rose is really smoking the Celtics, that means that the Wolves are probably in a position to win for this side of things.
That probably, if Derrick Rose is going for 40-plus, and no disrespect to D. Rose, but that probably doesn't mean a good thing for the Celtics. And lately when they've had some of these guards go off against them, really hasn't gone well. They lost to Dallas. They lost to Charlotte. They lost to the Knicks. So if you're the Celtics, yeah, let's not allow D Rose to go off for 40.
Well, and the other side of this too is because they play a lot. They're playing a lot of two point guard sets now, the Timberwolves.
Yeah.
The other side of this is Jeff Teague, who's averaging nearly 8 assists per game. I'm looking for him to elevate Robert Covington, because if you go back to last year, Robert Covington in 4 games against Boston, only 8 points, only shot 28% from 3. They did a really great job of attacking Robert Covington last year.
Yeah.
But And here's my sneaky hot take. I was talking with Fox 9's Pierre Nugent about it, is that Ben Simmons may be a little bit of an overrated guard. If you look at all the stats for Robert Covington, Dario Saric, all their shooting percentage stuff is taking a jump up because they actually have point guards that can shoot passing them the ball. And so now if you're looking at this, Robert Covington might be a real problem. You can't crash and kind of double him on the outside when you're doing a little pick and roll at the top of the key trying to get a three-point shooter open now, because you have to worry about both Teague and Covington taking that shot.
Yeah, Covington's an interesting case because I'm a huge Robert Covington fan. I think he's one of the best 3-and-D guys in the league. But like you said, he hasn't really had a great track record against the Celtics, specifically in the playoffs last year. They keyed in on him on, you know, when the Sixers had the ball, and it just didn't go well. And maybe that is because they don't have to focus on Simmons around the perimeter. And obviously that's showing in the stats since he's been playing with Teague and Rose and even Okogie. But it was weird because when he would play against the Celtics last year, they seemed to kind of feast on him on the defensive side of the ball, which is really rare, obviously, because he's a phenomenal defensive player. And a lot of people struggle against him, but Jason Tatum kind of had his way with him. So I thought that was interesting, but it's going to be pretty cool to see him without Ben Simmons against the Celtics, because a lot of Celtics fans and people around the Celtics, their take of Covington is the guy who the Celtics kind of picked on almost for at least last season. And that's just not Covington's mantra. He's a defensive stopper and he's an elite shooter, or close to an elite shooter, in my opinion. So it'll be interesting to see him alongside some shooting guards. And I think what you noted about the 2-point guard sets could go either way for the Celtics, because with those 2-point guard sets from Minnesota, sometimes that'll up the pace. And I think the Celtics need to do a little bit more of enforcing a fast pace. They kind of, a lot of times they start out in the first quarter with a pretty good pace, but it slows down for whatever reason, whether they get into the bench unit, whatever it is, it slows down. So I think, you know, maybe if Minnesota does run that quicker pace and the Celtics do get sucked into it, it actually could benefit the Celtics, because I personally think they operate better on the offensive end with a faster pace.
And then the last thing that kind of sticks out to me before we get into maybe predictions and stuff like that, Karl Anthony Towns. Now, I respect the hell out of Al Horford, and I really love watching him play.
There's
a butt coming. And I want to preface that by saying I really love watching a really high IQ basketball player play.
Yep.
And his versatility is amazing. But there's the but. His defensive numbers have been down this year. And if he's not bringing it in this game, Aaron Baines, I got to be honest, does not worry me against Karl Anthony Towns. And there's not another guy that worries me. I mean, you could throw maybe a Morris at him and try and just play bully ball and get somebody to double him with Morris and play bully ball. That doesn't really worry me, because I think Towns is just starting to lock into a zone where I don't know if that stuff is going to get to him anymore. At least he's been in a zone the last probably 2 weeks, and I don't know if that stuff is going to really get into his head as much as it may have last year. And if you have Al Horford just on an off night, Aaron Baines, he's going to take advantage of him.
Yeah, Aaron Baines is a pretty good defensive player. I think he actually would match up relatively well against Karl Anthony Towns. He's been really, really good against Joel Embiid in the past. But you're 100% right about Horford. He's had a pretty rough start to the season, which is unfortunate, because at the beginning of the year last year, and you know, coming off his big contract with the Celtics, a lot of people around the league just kind of cast him aside. Yeah, he's a good player, but he doesn't really do much for the Celtics with a team with Kyrie Irving and Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and all these higher profile players. And so, you know, being inside the Boston media, we did a lot to defend him last year and, you know, point out his strengths and how important he was to the team. And my opinion, he was the most important player on that team last year on both sides of the ball, just because he opened up so much flexibility for Brad Stevens. But whatever the reason may be, his defensive play just hasn't really been there. Maybe it's just him aging. He's a year older. Obviously, he's not the youngest dude in the world, but it's going to be interesting to see post this first quarter of the season how he changes his game, because at some point he's going to have to adapt to playing guys like Karl Anthony Towns, these modern bigs. I don't know, what's Karl Anthony Towns, a 23-year-old, I think, 23, and he's so athletic, and it creates such a brutal matchup for a guy like Al Horford. And so he's going to need to be on top of his game, which he hasn't been on the defensive side lately. So Don't be surprised if you do see a decent amount of Aaron Baines, but I would not ignore the fact that the Celtics are resting Horford tonight against Cleveland, probably because of the matchup with Karl Anthony Towns last night. Of course, they're going to be resting him throughout the season to save him up for the playoffs because he's an older guy, but it's no coincidence that they do have a matchup with Karl Anthony Towns tomorrow night and they're resting him tonight. So I think we will get that matchup, but who knows if it'll turn out well for Horford.
All right, we're going to take a quick break for some sponsors, and then we're going to get into some predictions. But first, some sponsors. All right, so before we get to predictions, quickly, do you think Jaylen Brown is going to play? I know that he's not playing against the Cavs. Do you think he'll be back in the lineup for the Timberwolves game?
I don't know. He didn't practice at all this week. Yesterday, Brad Stevens said he was still pretty sore. He took a really hard fall last weekend against Dallas. He landed straight on his tailbone. The good thing is, because of the depth, they don't have to rush him back. So I'm not really sure. We'll find out tonight if he's going to travel with the team, but I bet he'll be questionable going into the game tomorrow night, and I wouldn't be surprised if he misses the full weekend. So I wouldn't be shocked if he doesn't play.
All right, so if you're looking at the box score and you know that the Celtics have won or are winning in this game, you don't know the score, but you're just looking at the box score, what is it going to take for the Celtics to win? What does that box score have to say if the Celtics are going to be winning?
Well, it's got to have Marcus Smart in the starting lineup alongside Marcus Morris, which nice. I think is their golden lineup. It's going to have Marcus Morris being pretty efficient, which is crazy to say. If you were to tell me at the beginning of the year that Marcus Morris was going to be the Celtics' most consistent player, I would have told you were crazy. But he has been, and he's been one of their most efficient players too. So I think he has been the most efficient player, actually. But I think it's going to have a good game from him. Gordon Hayward is at some point going to have to start hitting his threes. He hasn't been so far this year, but if in the box score it says that he is he's decent from long range, I think that will result in the Celtics winning. But ultimately, it's Kyrie Irving and Jason Tatum that control that pace. And if they're efficient and if they're playing 30-plus minutes alongside Marcus Smart and Marcus Morris, I think the Celtics will be in good shape.
Side note, Marcus and Markeef, if they're wearing the same clothes, do you think you can tell them apart? Be honest.
Oh,
you've been around.
I think I can just because
you've been around both of them.
How much I'm around Marcus Morris, but I will tell you this. Last year when the Wizards weren't playing anymore, and I think it might have been it was either the Cleveland or the Philly series, Markeef came to a couple games, and he was wearing Marcus's jersey on the sideline, and it was the most confusing thing in the world. It put my mind in an absolute pretzel when I walked out onto the court. So, you know, thinking about that, maybe I couldn't, but I'd like to think I could tell them apart just because I'm around Morris, you know, a couple times a week.
All right, I just have to ask.
I think I'm a little overly confident.
For me, I think that the box score for the Timberwolves, if they're going to be winning, has to read a little something like San Antonio. They had, in total turnovers, San Antonio to Minnesota. San Antonio 19 compared to Minnesota's 9 turnovers. And they had one steal compared to Minnesota's 12. That is going to be key. I've pounded this all season long, but the Timberwolves are substituting turnovers and points off of turnovers for actual defense, which I think is something that you see probably on a lot of NBA teams. But I think I just think the Timberwolves are the most sold out to do it, and it's crucial for them to beat teams, especially good teams like the Celtics.
Yeah, and that's very similar alongside the Celtics. So they caused on Monday night 22 turnovers, which was the most they have all year. But it creates for them on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, you get out, and it again, back to that pace. I know I'm focusing on it a lot, but creating a turnover and getting out in transition is big because the Celtics are quick and they're athletic. They can beat teams in that regard, but it all starts on that defensive end, and it goes back to Marcus Smart because he's a catalyst for this team on the defensive end. So creating turnovers, creating on the defensive end, ultimately results in good things on the other side of the ball. So just as much as that goes for Minnesota, 100% agree, it goes with Boston as well.
Do you think that Jason Tatum and his scoring is a key here, or is he going to have trouble against some of the longer forwards of the Timberwolves? Do you think that Kyrie Irving, like we were talking about earlier, he's got to be kind of the guy putting the biscuit in the basket, as they say, at the end of the game?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Jason Tatum, again, back to that matchup with Covington, I'm kind of interested to see how that goes because he did match up pretty well with Covington, surprisingly, last year. So that'll be my focus here. I think it's not the end of the world if he doesn't have a great game. Kyrie's been pretty solid scoring-wise. He's averaging 22 a game so far this year. And you got guys like Morris, and hopefully Terry Rozier can have a productive game. But Morris and Kyrie have really been leading that scoring charge, and so it's not really the end-all be-all if Covington does shut down Tatum. But I could see him potentially having some trouble against that, you know, long Thibodeau defense.
I mean, Covington is going to be crucial for the Timberwolves. He's averaging through eight games 2.8 steals per game. That's a steal more than any other time in his career that he's averaged, any other career average that he's had. But I'm going to say Wiggins is probably the biggest, as far as scoring, Wiggins is probably the biggest factor for the Timberwolves. He's been in a bit of a slump these last few games. And if he can come out, lights shining bright, if he can come out and drop like 30 points and shoot well, especially from outside and from on the perimeter, I think that's going to be huge for the Timberwolves. Absolutely massive.
Yeah, and that just opens up a world, because if they got to focus on Wiggins more so, it opens up some matchups for Towns and that two-guard set, whether it's Teague and Rose or Rose and Okogie. It just opens up a whole new game. I mean, obviously Wiggins shooting has been a problem, but you get him going along the perimeter or getting to the rim and finishing, I think that's going to create a lot of problems, because if he's on his game, the Timberwolves become a really, really brutal matchup for anyone. It doesn't matter who they're playing.
For sure, for sure. All right, give us a score prediction before we head out here.
Oh, a score prediction. All right,
I'm going to make you do it. I want to bet the over-under on this game. I need all the help I can get.
Oh, never bet the under. Betting the under is no fun. You don't want to root for no baskets. But I would say let's go with one. I think the Celtics do win. I think the Celtics have a pretty successful weekend. I think they're starting to bounce back. Could be on the verge of a little winning streak, but I think it'll be close. I think final score is like 105 to 115. Celtics win.
I actually really love this game if it's over 100. I think that if the Celtics play half court, that's how they probably win this game. As much as the emphasis on pace has been for this team, if they keep this in the half court, it's going to kill the Timberwolves. If they start running with them and get it to be like a 120, 112, 120, 115 kind of game, I think that's the game the Timberwolves win. And I think that's when you see Derrick Rose really open up some stuff for Covington and for Wiggins on the outside. And so I actually like this if both teams are over 100 for the Timberwolves.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, the Celtics obviously live on that defense. So if they do allow the Timberwolves to get out and transition and really pump that scoreboard, it could be, if it turns into a shootout, it could be a problem. So with Marcus Smart in that starting lineup, I think the Celtics are hoping that that doesn't happen. But you're right, it starts on that defensive side of the ball for the Celtics, and they better hope it doesn't turn into a shootout, because it could not bode well for them.
All right, Chris, what should we be looking out for from you?
You can follow me on Twitter at Chris Grenham. Check out all my stuff at Celtics Blog. Just the beat writer rap, game recaps, previews, all that good stuff. For anything Celtics, head over to Celtics Blog.
Fantastic. Go check it out. Be the best prepared you can be for tomorrow's game against the Celtics at home for the Timberwolves. Thank you, Chris, so much for joining us. And thank you to the listener for tuning in to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.